Hello, and welcome to All About Books on NET Radio. I'm your host, Pat Leach, director of Lincoln City Libraries. I continue my reading through the American Library Association Notable Books list. I've mentioned before how much I enjoy this reading task. It exposes me to books I'd not have known about otherwise, and sometimes reminds me to read some of the ones that everyone seems to be talking about. An aspect of this reading practice that isn't always so positive is finding myself eager to finish a book just so I can mark it off the list. I'm not sure that's an especially healthy reading habit. But it does explain why I was so pleased to see today's book called Grief is the Thing with Feathers by Max Porter. It's only 114 pages long, and it has a lot of white space. It reads so fast, I ended up reading it twice to be sure I hadn't rushed too quickly through the experience. It's a novel that looks a lot like poetry about a family, a man and his two sons, after the man's wife, his son's mother, dies suddenly. The boys are elementary school age when this happens. The novel is told partly in the voice of the father, looking back after several years, and partly in the voice of the boys, also looking back after some time. What's interesting about the boys' sections is that the two boys talk with just one voice. That is all fairly conventional, though very well written and beautifully observed. What makes the story both odd and fascinating is the third voice, that of Crow. The dad is a scholar and fan of the British poet Ted Hughes, who's probably best known outside of academic circles as the husband of Sylvia Plath. Hughes wrote a radical and well-studied collection of poems featuring Crow. It's almost reasonable, then, that a crow should be the fantastic figure that enters this sad household and makes his unique contributions to the process of their grief. Here is how Crow, in this book, describes his arrival. In other versions, I am a doctor or a ghost. Perfect devices, doctors, ghosts, and crows. We can do things other characters can't, like eat sorrow, unbirth secrets, and have theatrical battles with language and God. I was friend, excuse, Deus ex machina, joke, symptom, figment, specter, crutch, toy, phantom, gag, analyst, and babysitter. I was, after all, the central bird at every extreme. I'm a template. I know that. He knows that. A myth to be slipped into. Author Max Porter has described in interviews how he lost his own mother at a young age. This section, from The Boys, reflects Porter's memory of that time and one of his initial reactions to that death. Where are the fire engines? Where is the noise and clamor of an event like this? Where are the strangers going out of their way to help, screaming, flinging bits of emergency glow-in-the-dark equipment at us to try and settle and save us? There should be men in helmets speaking a new and dramatic language of crisis. There should be horrible levels of noise, completely foreign and inappropriate for our cozy London flat. There were no crowds and no uniformed strangers, and there was no new language of crisis. We stayed in our PJs, and people visited and gave us stuff. Holiday and school became the same. The boys offer poignant observations of how they act out missing their mom, such as spraying toothpaste all over the bathroom mirror. She hated that. And yet, often the boys show remarkable kindness to their dad. Porter keeps the story tight by having each character describe what he sees in the others. The short length of the book doesn't allow for a lot of scenes to be described. The ones that are included have to convey a lot of meaning, as here when the dad is recalling his early love for his wife, and love in general. I remember being scared that something must surely go wrong if we were this happy, her and me, in the early days, when our love was settling into the shape of our lives like cake mixture reaching the corners of the tin as it swells and bakes. I remember my first date, age 15, with a girl called Hillary Gidding. A coin fell down the back of the cinema seats, and we both slipped our hands into the tight, fuzzy gap of the chairs, past popcorn kernels and sticky ticket stubs, and our hands met, stroking the carpet, feeling for the coin, and it was electric. The wrist being clamped by upholstery, the darkness, the accident, the lovely dirt of public spaces. I don't have a lot of familiarity with poetry, and I've wondered what I've missed in this book because I couldn't see references or inside jokes. The title is a play on Emily Dickinson's poem, Hope is the Thing with Feathers. And I have wondered how much more I'd have gotten from the book were I more familiar with the study of Ted Hughes' poetry. Clearly, there are many references about the academic study of his work. Even so, I got a good deal from Grief is a Thing with Feathers, even without that background. The interactions between the dad and sons ring true. The way that children observe their parents also rang true. And at a certain point, even that mythical, mystical character of Crow also rang true. My own experience of grief has been that it does resemble a creature that enters your space, an uninvited creature, one that expects to be fed and carried. And yet, one ends up in relationship with it in unexpected ways, and at some point, one realizes that the creature isn't coming around as often. Here is how the boys describe their dad after their mother's death and the impact of Crow on their dad. Afterwards, he, Dad, was quieter. He was, for 2 or 3 years, by all accounts, very odd. He had the perpetual look and demeanor of someone floating, turning in the beer-gold light of evening and being surprised by the enduring warmth, a rolled-over shoulder, half-squint, half-smile, caught baffled by the perplexing slow release of sadness forever and ever and ever, which, I suppose, looking back, was because of us. He couldn't rage. He couldn't want to die. He couldn't rail against an absence when it was singing, grinning, freckling, and the English summer twiddledy-twiddledum in front of him. Perhaps if Crow taught him anything, it was a constant balancing, for want of a less dirty word, faith. A howling sorry, which is yes, which is thank you, which is onwards. I usually step back to ask myself, to whom will I recommend this book? Well, in this case, it won't be to people who insist on thinking literally, but to people who seek an unusual way of describing grief, who may recognize Max Porter's gift in sticking with a small container for such a big story, and maybe especially for those people who've experienced a similar grief, I'll recommend this. The publishing world has seen quite a few grief memoirs lately. Elizabeth Alexander, Sheryl Sandberg, and Paul Kalanithi. I've noted in other reviews that readers of these books are often surprised by how hope seems to beat back despair. In this novel, what's surprising is how well Max Porter places this family's grief next to absurdity and happiness and the urge to live. That Crow intruded into the family in the early days when they needed him most maybe seems most absurd, and yet it worked. The book is Grief is the Thing with Feathers, a novel by Max Porter. You've been listening to All About Books on NET Radio. Podcasts of this and other programs are available online. Visit netnebraska.org/radio. For All About Books, I'm Pat Leach.